Identity politics. It's a phrase that's been around for decades, but it's been thrown around a lot more since the 2016 election. And depending on who you ask, on the left or the right, it's something that's increasingly seen as detrimental to our politics.
The Democratic Party needs to try and gravitate away from identity politics and towards things that would actually bridge the gap.
We've become this identity politics, the Women's Caucus, the Black Caucus, the Hispanic Caucus. We've lost sense of we.
Identity politics will destroy this country faster than a foreign invasion.
Of course, some prominent Democrats have been pushing back on the idea that identity politics can cost you an election, notably Senator Kamala Harris. This past weekend in North Carolina, she said people, including Democrats, have turned the phrase into the 21st century version of playing the race card.
People bring it up in a way that is meant to marginalize the subject, in a way that I believe is meant to say, hush. When we talk about how our country is and where we are on civil rights issues, it is not about identity politics in the way that they try to phrase it. Where America stands on core issues of civil rights is about America's identity.
Part of the issue is that the term identity politics is often reserved for when candidates talk about issues that affect minority communities, but not for coded appeals to white voters or evangelical Christians. To understand why, we have to go way back in this country's political history. This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. Here to help us break it all down is Jane Costin, senior politics reporter for Vox, and Adam Serwer, staff writer for The Atlantic. Jane, Adam, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Jane, let's get started with you. This whole identity politics thing, this has happened earlier in eras of U.S. history, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that when we talk about quote-unquote identity politics, it's worth recognizing that a large swath of our politics is identity politics. So, for example, you know, when we're talking about the populist movement of 1890, that's identity politics. It's based on the identity of farmers. You know, when we're talking about specific groups and how politicians work with those groups, that's not a bad thing. That's how politics works. That's how people can talk about issues that might matter to someone in Xenia, Ohio, and some issues that might matter to someone who lives in downtown LA.
Adam, when we talk about, again, identity politics, it's often like this dog whistle that's being used to attack those on the left. Talk about the strategy that Republicans are using here to deride Democrats.
In a way, denigrating identity politics is itself a kind of identity politics because of the way that the term is typically used to refer to issues that minorities care about. But when you look at the Trump-era Republican Party, it's tremendously about identity politics. It involves a lot of stoking fears about Latino immigrants, Muslim terrorists, black criminality. It's actually a bit misleading to say that someone who says we should strengthen the Voting Rights Act is engaging in identity politics, and a president who says four women of color in Congress should go back to where they came from is not engaging in identity politics. To the extent that the Republican Party under Trump has one consistent story, it is a story that these other people who are different from you are taking the things that you deserve.
And Adam, one thing that we're hearing, I mean, let's be honest, like this is also coming from among the Democratic candidates for president. There are those who have really latched on to the sort of progressive ideals that are now in the zeitgeist, and those that have towed more of a middle of the line approach and use things like we need to appeal to a, quote, broad swath of Americans. What is that strategy all about?
Well, I think that actually speaks to what we're talking about, which is that it's not called identity politics when you're trying to specifically appeal to white people, even though that is a form of identity politics. So when people use those code terms like appeal to a broad swath of Americans, what they mean is they want the Democratic candidates not to say things that are going to scare away moderate white voters who might be more likely to vote for Trump if a Democratic candidate seems too progressive on issues of race and culture. But that is also a form of identity politics. And I think that it is significantly affecting the Democratic Party. I mean, to the extent that Joe Biden is running so far ahead of the other Democratic candidates, I think that has a lot to do with the perception that Biden is less threatening to those swing voters who might feel more uncomfortable with a candidate who is not essentially a white guy.
Jane, let's dig into a little bit what Adam's saying there, because really we're talking about white identity politics here. You kind of mentioned that at the top of the show. How is it viewed, or is it even acknowledged within the Republican Party at all?
I think that there is some idea that it is a specific form of identity politics, but I think that there's a view that it's kind of the identity politics that they have to engage in. And I think it's interesting because it's also calling back to a halcyon era of what the Republican Party used to look like and not so reflective of what the Republican Party looks like now. So when you talk about, for instance, suburban white women who are peeling off from the Republican Party, as we saw in 2018, there aren't really direct appeals towards them, but there are direct appeals towards people working on specific industries that don't employ as many people as they used to, or it's kind of the idea of someone. You know, for instance, when we're talking about the tariff wars, we're talking about bailouts to farmers. We're not talking about, you know, individual mom and pop farms. We're talking about massive, heavily subsidized farms in Iowa and elsewhere that are, you know, obviously very important economically, but they're not what a lot of people think about when they think about the term farmer. And I think one of the most fascinating things that's going on in the Republican Party right now is that you have a lot of Republican consultants and Republican pundits who are using white identity politics while also not being a part of the groups they're talking about. So, you know, when you hear from people who write for the New York Times or First Things, who are based in New York, talking about flyover states and talking about how no one's listening to real America while they're in Manhattan themselves. It's kind of an ironic setup.
Off of that, Adam, I think, you know, looking at the Democratic slate, you mentioned Biden is at the top, partly because he's sort of towing this line, but he also wants the quote unquote Obama coalition of multi-ethnic voters to come out and vote for him. I'm wondering if you can assess a little bit how the other two front runners might or might not be using identity politics, talking about Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren here.
Well, just to be clear, I mean, Biden is left of center. He's a liberal candidate. I think there is a perception that he is culturally more conservative than the other candidates. He's certainly policy-wise, he's more conservative, but he's not a conservative candidate. I think you see in terms of Warren and Sanders, both of them have constructed very populist economic appeals to the left of Biden, but they've also been a bit more forthcoming on civil rights issues in a way that I think Biden has not, in part because Biden thinks that the rest of the party is going too far on things like decriminalizing border crossings or on the issues of reparations for slavery and discrimination against African Americans, to which Sanders and Warren have signaled openness to. So I think, you know, it's sometimes when we talk about identity politics, we sort of pretend that there's no actual policy content to it. But in this case, I think there very much is.
Jane, back in the 2016 election, there was a lot of talk, again, a lot of identity politics, at least when it comes to conservatives and GOP voters, is often shrouded in sort of coded language. And one of those things was economic anxiety. Now, again, that's not to suggest that white Americans were not suffering from economic anxiety, that they weren't dealing with high levels of opioid addiction, et cetera. But let's talk a little bit about how that played into the GOP strategy and whether or not that same economic anxiety argument will hold in 2020.
Well, first and foremost, I think it was a fascinating argument because, you know, some of the subjects you just brought up are not just being felt by white Americans. The opioid crisis has hit African Americans really hard, specifically with rising rates of heroin addiction. But I think that this idea and the concept of economic anxiety is that there are groups that shouldn't be anxious and groups that should be anxious. And so I think for me, I remember the 1990s and hearing a lot about pulling up one's bootstraps and personal responsibility, and then to have the 2016 election focused on a Republican candidate who was making very unconservative arguments about how there's going to be health care for everyone. And that's this idea that there were people who deserve something better and people who don't deserve something better. And so it'll be interesting to see how that's reflected in 2020, because I think that Trump was in some ways the change candidate, and Hillary Clinton was viewed as the stasis or everything stays the same candidate. In 2020, Trump will be attempting to run on 4 years of having been president. The idea of making America great again would now imply that he has not been making America great again. And that's what you've seen kind of the change to keep America great, because apparently American greatness was assured in like 36 months. But I think that it'll be interesting to see how that argument works, because in order to square that economic anxiety argument, you're going to have to say, you know, I've been extremely successful, but also not successful enough for you to choose someone else as president.
Adam, what are some of the Democratic candidates afraid of? I mean, are we not giving white voters, for example, credit for assuming that they can, you know, both process the idea that there are civil rights and justices that affect certain communities, perhaps of color more than others, and while at the same time understanding that things like healthcare and education and jobs are important? I mean, is this fear reasonable and rational?
To go to the economic anxiety argument, the issue is not economic anxiety, it's how you see your problems. Black and Hispanic voters suffered tremendously because of the recession, disproportionately so. But the arguments that Donald Trump made as to why they were struggling did not appeal to them, in part because they were the people being blamed for that economic anxiety. So you always have to look at the ideological lens through which people view their misfortune. And if you go back to 2015, 2016, you can see a lot of Republicans, a lot of websites that were considered themselves conservative, that were once anti-Trump, that are now pro-Trump, who are saying the exact same things that liberals are saying now about the way that Trump appeals or exploits white identity politics. But I think it's rational in the sense that people, Democrats, are afraid that having seen this argument work once, that Trump will be able to exploit people's prejudices once again. I think that that's not necessarily the case. If you look at 2018, Trump went very hard on the sort of migrant caravan, and it did not prevent him from losing the House in numbers that we haven't seen since Watergate.
We'll be watching. Adam Serwer, staff writer for The Atlantic, and Jane Costin, senior politics reporter for Vox. Thanks to you both.
Thanks so much.
Hi, this is Brian calling from Pittsburgh. Identity politics is just a code word the GOP uses to make it seem like it's bad to think about minorities and LGBT people when they campaign and vote.
This is Lori calling from Richmond, Virginia. What's happening in the world is affecting all of us, whether it is the environment, whether it's taxes, whether it's violence. It doesn't seem to be picking a creed, color, age group. You know, I think that we've become smarter and we see people as a people.
This is Josh from Fishtown, and I don't believe identity politics play a role anymore. If, you know, if states are the laboratories of democracy, it's equivalent to never upgrading your tools. So no, I don't think they serve anyone anymore.
Hi, it's Layla from San Francisco. Identity politics is the recognition that class, race, gender, and sexual orientation impact every aspect of a person's life, and that there isn't just one American identity. At the same time, a nation does need a national identity of some sort. I think our national identity should be based on our rights and values.